Start your day off on the right foot with great local programming on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE.
Welcome to our morning show studios today. We have Representative Tony Kurtz in the studio representing Wisconsin's 41st Assembly District and Representative Todd Novak representing Assembly District 51. Good to talk to you gentlemen today, bringing you some warm thoughts. Tony, how are you?
Morning, Phil. Morning to all your wonderful listeners. It's wonderful to be here, especially with my good friend, Todd.
Todd, it's been a while since you've been in the studios.
Yeah, I think May was the last time I was here, so it's great to be back, and it's always just makes me warm and fuzzy to be with Tony Kurtz. So Valentine's Day was Friday, you know.
Sure.
I get to spend Monday with, we're together all week in sessions. So,
well, we were with each other on Friday.
Valentine's Day.
Representative Jacobson and Representative Tranel.
Yeah.
Be my Valentine. Yeah. Yes. Roll up your pants legs a little bit here today. So, Todd, you represent a different district than the last time you were here. Can you tell us where you represent now?
Yeah, I was thinking about that driving up here because, you know, I had the southern part of corner of Richland County and Lone Rock and that whole area. And it's Tony's now, but I really miss that area. But I have all of Iowa County now instead of half. All of Lafayette, which I had most of before, and then I have the northern part of Grant, like Muscadet, Blue River, Livingston, Mountfort, that area, and all the townships just around it. I almost go to Fenimore, and then I have Cuba City and Hazel Green in the southern part, and then for kicker, they gave me a little piece of Dane County, so I have Mount Horeb and Blue Mounds and two townships there. So it was a different election for me this time, about 50% of my district was new, so it was really interesting and fun to get to know the new people in my district. So,
well, you're still kind of in the middle, though, living in Dodgeville.
Yeah, right? Dodgeville, I am exactly in the middle. It's a pretty big district, you know, to go from Blue River all the way on one side to Mount Horeb on the other, you know, still border the Illinois line. Travis, you know, the Grant County piece I took from Travis, and then they gave him Crawford County, so we all kind of shifted. And Travis and I, of course, still have Howard as a senator. Tony doesn't anymore, so he's really not part of our delegation, so he's like he's gone a little below us, but we still like to work with him and bring him in for things for the area. So
he's an outcast.
Yeah, he's an outcast. No, we still work all together for Southwest Wisconsin. It doesn't make a difference. So
awesome. Tony, how are things on the farm these days?
I'm glad we got a little snow cover, but yeah. I'm kind of wondering if it's too late because, you know, there's a lot of winter wheats. A lot of people worried about, you know, their alfalfa, and I guess only time will tell when the spring comes. So, yeah, because not having that snow cover for so long, I mean, it really, I think, hurt a lot of winter wheat. But once again, we'll see. But we need the snow cover. We need the ground moisture, and hopefully it will sink in. I don't know if it will because, of course, the ground's pretty frozen too. So
could be getting some more snow though. Hopefully, you know, that's the case. So you were here a little earlier. You did a tour of the Richland campus facility, the former campus. Can you give us an update or some things you think?
Well, so on Friday, Representative Novak and I were with a couple of the county board chairs, and they were just going over some of the issues they're facing, obviously with budget season coming up. But afterwards, I took a tour with, you know, the county board chair and the interim county administrator of the campus out there, and I was a little disappointed on the way UW, and I'm actually being very kind when I say disappointed. UW left a mess out there, to be very honest with folks, and so I'm actually going to have a meeting with UW Assistant President Mr. Rothman next week concerning that, because it is entirely unacceptable, the mess they left out at that campus. And I am being very kind with my words right now, because when I got done touring the facility, I was actually pretty livid, because what they left out there for, it's like, I wasn't joking, but you know, when COVID hit on, you know, 17th of March of 2000, everything basically shut down. Mm-hmm. It kind of looked like one day they were working and the next day they just literally walked out. And it's like, you could go back and start teaching a class there right now. And it's just very disappointing the way UW system left that facility right now. So
you're going to have the meeting, and what are some things you might suggest?
Well, we're going to, first of all, they need to clean their mess up. I mean, I think that's job number one, just the way they left it. And we'll go from there. Like my staff, after I got off the phone, I kind of had to calm down a little bit, because I got probably 50, 60 photos on my phone that I'm going to share with Mr. Rothman about what they did out there. And so we'll go from there. But I think they need to do a lot more than they're doing right now, that's for sure.
You have a lot of things going on. In fact, the governor's budget address is coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow at 7 p.m. We'll sit there. Todd and I will be in our seats and listen to the governor's address, as with our Senate colleagues. And we'll just see what he has to say. Obviously, there's been a little sneak peeks on some of the things he's going to introduce. I know over the weekend there was some interest in some correction and some correction facilities that he has some ideas about. I'm glad that he has finally recognized we need to close the Green Bay Correctional Institute, but obviously Waupun, that's something we'll talk about as we move forward. And if anybody don't know, Green Bay and the Waupun prison, they're max security prisons, I knew, but they were built literally in the late 1800s. So if any of your listeners have ever seen the movie Shawshank Redemption, I mean, these are incredibly old prisons. They are taking an unbelievable amount of resources, i.e. money, to maintain them and fix things that are broken. It's unsafe for our correctional officers, and so it's high time that we, in my humble opinion, we should replace both of those and perhaps build like a prison like we have in Boscobel, where that one actually is doing quite well and is serving our needs as a state. And so I'm glad to see it's in there. We'll just see what the rest of the address will be tomorrow night.
So, in other words, you'd rather see just one big prison, a new one?
So Green Bay and Waupun, respectively. Green Bay holds about 1,000. It was built to hold around 800. Waupun is very similar. My suggestion is, I'm not saying we add bed capacity, because obviously Governor Evers would not support something like that, but my hope would be that we eventually close both of those prisons and build a new one with basically the same. So if the bed capacity is, we'll just say 1,800 between the two of them, let's build a new prison with the capacity of 1,800. It would be my suggestion, because Green Bay obviously is old and costing us, but so is Waupun. Waupun is also built in the late 1800s. It's incredibly high maintenance. A lot of the materials are failing, and it still has the same type of issues with staffing. That, you know, correctional staff don't like working at either one. And if you look at the vacancy rates across the board, we've increased our vacancy. We've decreased our vacancy rate, especially at Boscobel, New Lisbon. Like Boscobel is like 40% vacancy rates. They're down to like 1%. Whereas you look at Green Bay and Waupun, those vacancy rates are still very high because people don't want to work there. And I think that would go a long way of replacing those and just protecting our correctional officers.
Todd, what are you looking forward to in the governor's address?
Tony said, well, hopefully we can finally address the prison situation. We've been trying to do that for a long time. And I think it's a starting point as far as where the prisons is, but you know, I noticed a caveat in there that part of the solution he wants to release, do early releases. And I'm not so sure that releasing prisoners is a I think that'll be a non-starter with us. It is kind of with me. And so that's just not a way to solve your prison overpopulation, is to just start releasing people. I look for a Christmas. It's going to be Christmas tomorrow night. And this is what I always tell people as we talk about the budget, because he is going to put every great soundbite and money and everything in there. I think, and Tony knows these numbers better than I do, the last budget took a surplus and took us to a deficit of almost $1 billion and raised taxes tremendously. So I expect the same kind of budget. I will say that of the early drips, we call it, that he's been putting out on the budget, some of his programs that he's, like the egg stuff he's put out, that's an easy yes, and it's those kind of things. But it's going to be, I expect him just to raise taxes probably and start up. Continue programs. I think what's going to be interesting about this budget, a lot of the things that he has done with the federal COVID money, we're starting new programs, spending money for new positions, and that was one-time funding, and he's going to want to continue that. So I just urge your listeners to kind of try to figure that out. We have a child care crisis. We all know that. We need to work on that. But he's got a program he started with the federal money that's $500-600 million a year just to keep it going. And I mean, we just can't go at the level he's going to win it. So I expect another budget that will be out of whack, and then we'll start negotiating. I don't know, what is it, Tony, about 3 weeks, 4 weeks, we'll get the numbers on this budget. The budget comes out, then LFB looks at it, Legislative Fiscal Bureau, and gives us the total numbers, what the programs are, and really 1,000-page document, and we'll go from there. But it'll be interesting to see.
Some light reading then, in other words, right?
Yeah.
So he'll introduce his budget tomorrow night, and we will come into finance and actually then introduce the budget to the legislature. And then to Todd's point, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, which, we've talked about with your listeners in the past, they will actually go through the actual budget to find out what every program costs. And then to Todd's point, then at the end, we'll kind of figure out what if there's a structural deficit or not. I would suspect that there will be a structural deficit. And basically what that means is at the end of the budget, 2 years from now, it's how much we're in the hole or how much we're up. Typically, it's like an 1,800-page document, and it's quite the reading. So, and it's all broken down a bit. But I do want to emphasize one of the things that Todd mentioned was it's called Child Care Counts. Child Care Counts was a program that Governor Evers opened with using one-time money from the feds. And, there's some misconception out there that child care has always been an issue. It was an issue when my wife and I had our kids in child care, 25 years ago. It's an issue now. And we have provided funding in the budget. The big difference is with child care counts, kind of the way the governor has done it with the federal money, is basically everybody's getting their child care paid for it. And so what do I mean by that? In the northern part of my district, I have two doctors, and they have three children. And with child care counts, we collectively are paying for those two doctors' child care. And I think the majority of our constituents think that those two have the means to pay for their own child care, and that we don't need to have the state pay for their child care. On the flip side of that, if we've got somebody, a single mom with two kids in child care, I think as a society, we want to help her at that lower end. And in fact, we did do that in the last budget. There was actually $93 million put away to help those those struggling on the lower end with child care costs. It's just the difference of philosophy. We understand there's a need to help with child care. It's just who and at what income level are we going to help those people?
Yeah, so how do you go about that? You divide it up by income?
Well, or you just say after a certain level, and this is something you can have a debate about, like that one, anybody below basically 220% of the federal poverty level can apply and gets credit for their child care, and then above that you're not. Now last budget we actually increased that, and I could see us doing something like that again, where we increase the income limit on somebody to get the program. But I think the vast majority of people think, you know, if you're, you know, you're at that higher end, like obviously two doctors, I don't think the majority of people think we should be paying for their child care. So it's income based is my point to you.
Mm-hmm. Todd, did you have something to add on that?
No, Tony did a good job. And that's the problem with some of these programs. I have no problem helping people that truly need it, but there's a lot of these programs that are across the board that even Tony could qualify for. And I mean, really, he shouldn't qualify for it. His wife's got a good job and he's a good farmer. And that's where it's just like you hear about expanding Badger Care and things like that. We have one of the top programs for low income people for health insurance in the United States, and it's recognized. And there are people. And the governor will probably propose this tomorrow night, expanding that to include people that make $50,000, $60,000, some thousand dollars that are single or whatever. It's kind of those programs, to me, are meant for people that really need them. And I have no problem. And I don't think the public does either. It's when you start expanding to include more and more people, at some point the money's got to run out. We really don't have you hear about the magical $4 billion surplus that we have. We don't have a $4 billion surplus. I think costs to continue, that's just to keep existing programs like Medicaid and those going, is going to be about $2 billion. A lot of the money that is in that $2 billion, $4 billion figure is money that he's vetoed for bills that we've passed and he vetoed them, so that's part of that money. So I look at the $4 billion as one-time money, and as I said at a meeting the other day, when I came in, we were broke. When I was first elected, it was hard. I said, I don't know what's worse, having no money or having money sitting there that everybody wants. And it's like, and we got to remember that's one-time money. A lot of it's the taxpayers' money. So it's going to be an interesting budget cycle this time, I think. So
it really will. And that, again, that's what people see on the headline, is that number for the surplus, Tony.
And that's why, you know, when I was on with you last time, I tried to emphasize that a little bit about the $4 billion surplus. And so, kind of the analogy I shared with you and your listeners last time is, if you remember during that COVID period, you know, basically, you know, 2020 to 2023 is kind of those COVID years. Each individual, you know, if you're under a certain limit, you got a stimulus check. Okay. Well, if you went out and just spent that stimulus check thinking every quarter you're going to get a stimulus check, well, that's going to put you in the hole. You know, the state basically, people in the state, it was like $50 to $60 billion came from the federal government just to the state of Wisconsin alone. The stimulus checks I just mentioned that people got, that amount was a little over $18 million. So of the, you know, say $55 million that came to the state, $18 billion of that was just COVID money, you know, the stimulus checks. Well, people spent that. And it's interesting because if you look at the tax and the sales tax revenue for 21, 22, and 23, our normal sales tax revenue, like a percentage basis year over year, is maybe like 3.5%, 4%, 3.7%. But during those COVID years of 2021, there were 9.6%. 2022, it was 9.4%. And then in 2023, it was 6.8%. That we were getting. So in other words, people were spending that stimulus check, and the state obviously collecting sales tax and income tax. We generated a tremendous amount of money, and that's Todd's point. We can't expect that's going to continue on, because it's not. We're already seeing growth slowing down. Our sales tax revenue last session was more like at 2.8%. So we're back to a very normal projections. And so we just got to be very careful as we move out into the future. So that's why Todd says this $4 billion is like one-time money, because people had all the COVID money, they spent it, and we basically collected the sales tax on that.
I know you guys are out and about a lot. Todd, you're mentioning seeing county board members and town board people and things like that. What's the biggest concern? I mean, what do you hear from some of the people?
As Tony alluded to before, Tony and I and Representative Tranel and Representative Jacobson, who represents Greene County, we met with five county board chairmen from the Southwest Regional Planning Commission. Counties, which is Grant, Greene, Richland, Iowa, and Lafayette. I'm actually on the commission, sir, representing Iowa County. I have been for years, so I deal with these guys all the time. So they wanted to have a meeting with us just to express their concerns, because they're struggling with their own budgets. And as I pointed out in the meeting, they kind of got hit by a perfect storm, too. We changed the shared revenue formula so they would be getting more money from the state last budget or last cycle. But however, they got hit so hard with inflation, as we all did, and health insurance costs. And they're struggling. And it was just not anything formal. It was just more discussion of, they wanted us to understand how hard it is for them to run the governments efficiently now. Because I will say, these counties that we represent and we're at this meeting are lean machines. They've spent years cutting, and they're down to the point where they can't get much more. So they were just looking for advice from us, or just kind of putting in a plug, try to get us more money when you can. And there's some things that they had, some ideas we can look at, like rules and regulations, and court fees have the state gets most of the court fees, for example, and they're suggesting that maybe we could get more of the court fees to take care of so the county wouldn't have to pick up so much. But they haven't been looked at for years. I'm open to looking at that, letting the county keep more of the court fees and just different things like that. So it was a really good 2-hour discussion. Some of my county board chairs, and they're in my district, are very interesting characters. He probably can't hear me anyway up here, but my Lafayette County Board Chairman is a farmer, a very good farmer, and he lets you know what he thinks sometimes colorfully. And so it was a really good discussion. I really enjoyed it. Of course, I have dealt with local government for so many years, so I get it and I understand it. And it wasn't like them screaming at us. It was just like, hey, we have some suggestions. This is what our problems are. Can you help us? And I think, too, and back to Tony's piece about the money, is we brought up sales tax, but our gas tax is decreasing because cars are more efficient. And things like that. We're gonna have a problem with, I'm not sure when it's coming. He probably knows better than I do, but we're gonna have a problem with funding roads. It's gonna get worse, I'm afraid. We've got to figure out another mechanism to fund roads, get more road money back to the counties. I mean, the cost to do a road is outrageous with the prices the way they are, and that's part of the county's problem. Too, is they are looking for ways out to get more money because they want to keep up on their roads.
Right. So. And I know you've been a big proponent of rural roadways in the area too, Tony.
Well, and to Todd's point, a mile of road's like over $470,000 right now. So, I mean, the costs have gone up, and everybody sees that. But, to Todd's point, the when you look at the numbers for our transportation fund, remember in 2014, the state passed a constitutional amendment that any money that goes into the transportation fund, that that's a segregated account, it can only be used for roads. Before that, just different administrations could go in and basically rob Peter to pay Paul if they ran short. Well, you can't do that anymore. So, your gas tax is 30.9. That goes right into the transportation fund. Your registration fees, obviously, I know people don't like paying that, but it's $85. That goes right into the transportation fund. Your title of vehicle, that goes straight into the transportation fund. It can only be roads for bridges. That funding is actually flat. and it's been flat for the last couple of years. As Todd mentioned, as vehicles get more fuel efficient, as some people choose an electric vehicle, you know, that all affects the funding that goes in the transportation fund. Now, what we have done over the last several budgets is we have been very good about taking a lot of our excess money, our one-time money, and putting it into the transportation fund. And I will say we have been making headway. I mean, I'm not saying we're there by any means, but we have slowly been chipping away at the backlog of a lot of road projects. And so, but to Todd's point, it's just one time in our state, we've got to have a discussion. What does the future of road funding mean? Are we going to still, you know, use the tax from the sale of a gallon of gas? You know, if so, what should that be? You know, are we going to do some type of, you know, per mile basis for people? Those are all have to be on the table, because once again, there is going to be a point where, you know, this $4 billion surplus, I could see that we're going to probably take some of that surplus and put more into roads. I mean, I think there's been, like last session, Todd and Representative Tranel and Howard were very instrumental in the ARIP, which was that Agricultural Road Improvement Program. Juneau County actually got one of those grants. You know, we've done more funding for a lot more of the county roads, and I think we'll use more one-time money for that again this budget, but once again, we got to have some more long-term on what does long-term funding for roads look like.
And Randy, talk about tolls.
Tolling is, go ahead, Todd.
Well, you know, when I came in, we were talking about tolls in 2014. And it was a big thing. And in the Southeast, that was a great idea. Or didn't a great idea. We went and studied it. But to go to tolls would take years because the federal government has to sign off. And I don't know if they ever followed through with asking the federal government. But it would not affect this over here, this area over here. As I said the other day at this meeting, it's our problem over here is we're fighting tooth and nail to get money for roads to our area, because the southeast quadrant of the state keeps saying, well, we have, and I've been told this by a Republican legislator before, I have 50,000 cars a day go through my district. You have 50 go on some of your roads. Why do you think you need more money? And my response is always, well, how do you think all the produce and all the stuff that's going on your roads, where do you think it comes from? I said, it comes from our area of the state to get shipped out of state. And so this is the problem that, you know, we kind of have as rural legislators is fighting and saying, hey, our roads are just as important. And part of the problem out here is we have in the townships, especially in the villages and stuff, we have 1950s and 60s road system that was built for the 1950s and 60s. It does not, isn't adequate for the equipment, the farm equipment we have today, the size of our vehicles. So it's just a problem. And I would note, we were talking about the counties, but I'm hearing the same thing from municipalities. And Howard and I were spoke at the Towns Association regional meeting a couple of weeks ago, and the towns, their number one thing is more road money. And that was just pretty much the whole discussion for an hour and a half was more road money and to help them out. So we're hearing it from all quarters of local government.
On the morning show, we have Tony Kurtz, Todd Novak, and we'll have more coming up here after this time out. Representatives Novak and Kurtz in the studio with us today on WRCO Radio, the next half of the morning show. Todd, I saw your name, and you were a part of introduction of legislation for the Office of School Safety. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, the Office of School Safety was created. I authored the bill to create it in 2018 with federal money. The office, along with a $100 million safety grant for schools to apply for to update their schools and make locked doors and stuff. So it was federal money to start to create the Office of School Safety. And what they do is they work with all schools in the state. They have a tip line. If there's any kind of threat or anything, you call this tip line and they will walk you through it. They come and they train teachers in every school. And there's this, about a staff of about 14, and they do a lot of work. I wish they could talk more about the work they've done, the threats that they've diffused and the situations they've been in, but unfortunately they can't. So long story short, the money ran out. That was going to run out last year, and so they were going to have to cut 10 positions down to 4. And Senator Quinn, who was from up north, and I put a bill out to move some money around, not new money, but move some money around in the state so they could keep funding those positions until September of this year. The bill that we put out Friday, we worked with Attorney General Call and the Office of School Safety, is to make these 14-point-some positions permanent.
Stay tuned for the second half of today's morning show program on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE. Coming up, though, in just a moment, we'll have a look at today's news.
One in Boscobel. Stop by and enjoy.
Participating restaurants, prices may vary, tax extra.
WRCE 100.9 FM.
Good morning. News Time is sponsored by Court and Main Furniture and Mattress, helping you create the home you can't wait to come home to. Today's forecast calls for a high of just 7 and mostly sunny conditions. We've already broken a record that goes back to 1979. 23 below zero right now in Richland Center. These schools are 2 hours late. Lafarge, Kickapoo, Boscobel, Fenimore, Hillsboro, Riverdale, Highland, Richland, including St. Mary's and Eagle, and also Ithaca, River Valley, including St. John's and St. Luke's, Weston, Waseca, Steuben, and North Crawford. In the Richland District, there's no AM Early Childhood, and there's no AM 4K in the Ithaca District. We'll check news coming up here on WRCO Radio and WRCE. Again, it's 23 below zero.
Are you looking to brighten up your space? Right now at Court & Main, everything lighting is 25% off. From sleek, modern lamps to cozy, warm styles, we've got something for every room. Whether you're updating your living room or adding a little glow to your bedroom, you'll find the perfect piece at a great price. Hurry in. This sale won't last long. Only at Court & Main in downtown Richland Center. Visit us today or call us at 608-647-8713. Exclusions do apply. See store for details.
I'm Phil Nee with news. Dangerous wind chills continue through Wednesday with frostbite possible in as little as 10 minutes. What's happening is your skin cells are literally freezing and dying. Signs include pain, numbness, swelling, blisters, and skin discoloration. It's most common on your fingers, toes, nose, and ears. Frostbite can lead to permanent irreversible damage. Never rub the areas that can damage the tissue even further as well. Those reminders today to take care during the next 24 hours or so before the warm-up with weather toward the weekend looks a lot better. Governor Tony Evers will deliver his 2025-27 biennial budget from the Assembly Chambers in the Wisconsin State Capitol tonight. Evers' remarks begin at 7 p.m. and will be live-streamed on the governor's YouTube channel and Facebook page. Evers has already revealed portions of his budget plan, including an overhaul of Wisconsin's correction systems, dealing with PFAS contamination of Wisconsin's water, and investments to support agriculture and reduce the costs of child care. Republican legislative leadership and the co-chairs of the Joint Finance Committee will hold a press conference following Evers' address. Wisconsin voters have only one statewide race on the ballot today, a three-candidate primary for state superintendent of public instruction. All three spoke with WISN's Up Front. Governor Tony Evers has an endorsed incumbent, Jill Underley, who voted Evers, also didn't endorse her in her first race. She hopes he does if she advances past the primary, but will understand if he doesn't, noting the position is nonpartisan. Sauk Prairie Superintendent Jeff Wright is one of two challengers to incumbent incumbent Jill Underley and said he's ready to work with Republicans who hold the majority in both the Assembly and the Senate. He noted he's a superintendent in Sauk County, which is the most purple county in the entire state. Education consultant Brittany Kinzer of Milwaukee is seen as the most conservative of the candidates, but characterizes herself as a moderate who's interested in putting students' needs first. The top two finishers advance to the April general election. Timely, much-needed snow is helping preparations for this weekend's American Birkebeiner cross-country ski race in northern Wisconsin. Birke Executive Director Ben Popp said melting won't be an issue with temperatures remaining bitterly cold the remainder of this week. Popp said they'll be out grooming the 34-mile Birke Trail between Cable and Hayward, and they hope temperatures won't be too cold for Saturday's race. Organizers will continue to monitor the weather to make sure it's safe for the racers and hundreds of volunteers. Over 14,000 skiers from across the U.S. and around the world are expected for the Birkebeiner. The NFL draft in Green Bay is less than 70 days away, and organizers encourage everyone who want to be a part of it to prepare early. Packers Director of Public Affairs Aaron Popke says you should download the NFL's OnePass app, which will be used to communicate event details. You can also reach out to local tourist groups around northern and eastern Wisconsin, many of whom will be offering shuttles to Green Bay. If you are driving to Green Bay, parking will be much like a Packers game day. Popke feels fans will be impressed with the setup, which will integrate Lambeau and the area around the stadium. The April 24th through the 26th draft will be free to attend, but you must register for a ticket in advance. Those who still need to reserve lodging will need to look at options in Appleton, Wausau, and Stevens Point areas and be prepared to pay as much as $250 per night. It's National FFA Week, a time to recognize the important role of the National FFA organization in developing the next generation of leaders who will change the world, and celebrating the 90th anniversary of New Farmers of America and the 75th anniversary of the federal chapter to Future Farmers of America. Each year, chapters around the country celebrate National FFA Week. There are 261 state chapters in Wisconsin, broken into 10 sections. Tyson Gerke, a graduate of Fenimore High School, serves as the treasurer for the Wisconsin State FFA chapter. He represents Section 4, which covers southwest Wisconsin with 27 FFA chapters. What prompted Gerke to become a state officer?
When I was in middle school, my mom told me to join FFA. And at first I was like, no, Mom, I don't want to farm. This thing's just for farming. But she said, just trust me, join it. And I came from a semi-agriculture background. My dad and grandpa farmed together. They still farm together. And growing up, I did not want to be on the farm. I stayed far away from it, thinking I was not going to have a career on the farm. So initially, I was very hesitant to join FFA. But I listened to my mom. I joined it. I just did little things here and there in middle school. And then as I got to high school, I got more and more involved, more active, traveled to different conferences, got involved in various activities such as career development events and leadership development events. And that really expanded my horizons of agriculture and FFA. And it is now because of my participation in FFA that I want to give back as well as enter a career in agriculture. And so it all started with a truck ride with my mom and her telling me to join FFA because she was the chapter president back in the 90s.
National FFA Week runs through Saturday. A man is dead after a snowmobile crash in northeast Wisconsin. Oconto County deputies say a 55-year-old man from Mequon crashed his snowmobile into a road sign on Friday. The crash happened near the town of Mountain. Officials say the driver apparently lost control of his sled and slid off the trail into the sign. The crash remains under investigation. The victim has not been identified.
If you're looking for the perfect flooring for your next project, whether it's carpet, tile, wood, or laminate, Badger Land Flooring has you covered. Not sure what suits your space? Visit Jamie, Amy, and the team at their showroom at 1475 Highway 14 East Richland Center. With over 40 years of installation experience, they will guide you to the best flooring solution and ensure it's done right. Stop by Badger Land Flooring and let their expertise bring your flooring vision to life.
Today's forecast calls for a high of 7, mostly sunny, very cold conditions. The cold weather advisory in effect until 10 this morning, and then hits again this evening, midnight, Wednesday until 9 a.m. A few clouds and bitter cold tonight, and a low of 9 degrees below zero. In Richland Center, we've been as cold as 25 below. Right now it is 24 below. The previous record low, 16 on the minus side, was established in 1979. These schools are 2 hours late. Lafarge, Kickapoo, Boscobel, Fenimore, Hillsboro, Riverdale, Highland, Richland, including St. Mary's and Eagle, where there's no AM early childhood. Ithaca is 2 hours late with no AM 4K. River Valley, including St. John's and St. Luke's, Weston, Waseca, Steuben, and North Crawford.
Want a satisfying meal for just $6? Try the new $6 meal deal from Dunkin'. It's a medium hot or iced coffee, a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich, and a side of hash browns for just $6. You know Dunkin' coffee. It's always made just how you like it. The bacon, egg, and cheese is toasty and delicious, and crispy golden hash browns are a must. So they're in the new $6 meal deal too. Take advantage of this offer while supplies last. Exclusions apply. See store for details.
Located in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin, Surplus Online Auction stands as a beacon of auction excellence. Family-owned and operated with roots dating back to 1975, Richard and Matthew Lust have built a legacy of connecting buyers and sellers through professional online auction services. Serving Wisconsin and the Midwest communities throughout, Wisconsin Surplus turns your unused equipment into cash. Their online auctions make it easy to buy and sell surplus assets from anywhere. Proudly based in Wisconsin, they're dedicated to sustainable auction solutions that help everyone. Join the thousands who have trusted Wisconsin Surplus. Visit WisconsinSurplus.com and discover the power of online auctions.
Sports Time is sponsored by Simon's Recreation Complex, Richland Center's Public Indoor Swimming Pool and Fitness Center, and by the Homesteader Store, Southern Wisconsin's Tractor Experts. We'll look at some area scores coming up here in just a moment.
LS Tractors are a great tractor at a great price. Hi, I'm Rick from the Homesteader Store. The fastest growing tractor line in Wisconsin is LS Tractor, part of the LG Group of Companies. These high quality four-wheel drive diesel tractors are one of the best values in compact tractors. They have silky smooth hydrostatic transmissions. They offer great financing. You can go to our website where you can watch a short video where I go through the different sizes of LS tractors to fit your needs. Learn about the full line of LS tractors at Southern Wisconsin Tractor Experts, the Homesteader Store.
The Richland Center girls basketball team won for a second time this season with a 50-42 win over Boscobel. The Hornets trailed by 11 in the first half before closing the gap. They were down by 1 at halftime. Boscobel would lead, and the Hornets would go up by 11 in the second half and held off Boscobel's comeback in the late game because of free throws. Hornets senior Carly Meaden had a big game with 22 points, including 11 from the free throw line. Kylie Burns added 15. Boscobel was paced by Kylie Johnson with 13. Avery Updike scored 12. Richland Center won the JV game 39-25 over the Bulldogs. Richland Center is on the road tonight to La Crosse. Logan Boscobel will play at Kickapoo as well. Elsewhere in girls basketball, Mauston over Westby 76-49. It was Argyle Pecatonica 63-40 over New Glarus. Marshall 48-38 over Wisconsin Heights. And Nisita beat Seneca 39-33. Boys basketball, it was Ithaca getting the win against Cashton, 67-42. River Valley, 77-36 over Boscobel. Riverdale, 58. Cassville, 40. Kickapoo, 74-70 over Seneca. North Crawford beat Weston, 92-22. And a win for Middle Point over Platteville, 91-59. On the schedule tonight in girls basketball, River Ridge at Riverdale. That's our scheduled broadcast. Albany, Monticello at River Valley, Ithaca at Highland, Westby at North Crawford, Potosi Cassville is at Platteville. As we had mentioned earlier, Richland Center at La Crosse Logan, then Viroqua was at DeSoto, Lancaster at Peck Argyle as well, Boscobel at Kickapoo, Prairie du Chien at Cuba City. Boys basketball, Ithaca at Lafarge, Lancaster at Waseca Steuben, Iowa Grant at Cassville, Prairie du Chien at Fenimore, North Crawford at Royal. Really good non-conference boys basketball game going on tonight, Dodgeville at Darlington, Cashton at New Lisbon, and Highland Place at River Ridge. It's team sectional wrestling scheduled tonight as well at Prairie du Chien. Both matches starting at 6. GET Melrose Maduro takes on Belmont Platteville and Fenimore versus Lodi, with the winners to meet in match 2 around 8 o'clock. And in Division 3 at Mineral Point, Aquinas wrestles Iowa Grand Highland. Simultaneously, as Mineral Point takes on Royal Oneiwoc Center, the winner of the matches will meet in the championship for the right to wrestle at Team State. Marquette hopes a week of rest and shooting practice will fix a shooting slump when Seton Hall visits the Phi Serve Forum for a game coming up tonight. The Golden Eagles won last time out, but the team's cold three-point shooting continued. And the Red Hot Badgers moved up another 5 positions in this week's AP College Basketball poll. Coach Greg Gard's team is rated 11th after a 4-game winning streak. That's the highest ranking for any Big Ten squad, although Michigan, Purdue, and Michigan State are close behind. Marquette gained 2 spots to number 16 after beating DePaul in its only action. Amid complaints about the new look of this latest NBA All-Star Weekend, Bucks forward Giannis Antetokounmpo has some suggestions. He thinks the league should take the annual event to the international stage. Giannis says the game could be played between an American team and stars from the EuroLeague. The Milwaukee standout says the 2027 All-Star Game could be played in Rio de Janeiro or China. The Wisconsin Athletics Department has found its new general manager of the football program right inside the building. Marcus Sedbury has been serving as Deputy Athletic Director, Chief Operating Officer for Wisconsin since 2022. ESPN reported his promotion on Monday. That's an update on sports for a Tuesday morning. I'm Phil Nee.
Why should you join Simon's Recreation Complex? It's not about their modern equipment or great exercise classes or even the comfy swimming pool. It's about how you can get the best out of your 50-plus body now and for the rest of your life. If you think taking part in the programs offered at Simon's Recreation Complex would be just for young people, it's time to rethink that notion.
You know, I had a school shooting in my district it was right before school got out, I believe, or April or May. It was in Mount Horeb. And so I got to see, unfortunately, firsthand the great work they do. And I've talked to the school staff up there, and I hear nothing but praise from the staff at the Office of School Safety. So it's very, very important. It's near and dear to me that we get this. Because this, you know, we don't think about that out in rural districts as much as, you know, you look where these shootings are. It doesn't really happen that much in rural districts. I think but also you notice a lot of this is going on because of mental health issues. The kid in Mount Horeb didn't even have a real gun. But he pointed at an officer. He was struggling. The Madison incident we just had, obviously there's some mental health issues there. And the Office of School Safety, they go in and they try to help identify, this kid's doing X, Y, and Z, just kind of off different mm-hmm. things. Should we be, you know, so people will call in, talk to a specialist at the Office of School Safety and say, is there something we should be looking for here and to get ahead of this? And so I believe we'll probably get it permanent. I've worked with a lot of the school districts on it. They, like I said, I've heard nothing but praise about the program. So I don't want to have them lose Tim. It would be detrimental for them to lose 10 people. And I think, well, how many tips did they get through their line last year off the cuff? Maybe 2,800. This is how many tips.
My goodness.
And this is Facebook postings. This is, you know, you've all heard about school is going to close today because of a perceived threat. It's usually a Facebook post or Snapchat. They're on all that. They get all these tips, and then they work with the local law enforcement. They work with the schools. So, like I said, I wish they could tout more of what they do and what they've seen and what they've stopped. But they unfortunately they can't. But it really works.
Is it a staff of? Is it 24 hours a day?
Yes, 24/7. And then I think the big part too, and this is where I hear the great things from the teachers, is they come out and train. They hold sessions. They'll, on in-service days, you see school in-service days, and yeah, there may be a day where the Office of School Safety comes out and is training teachers and signs to look for and everything. We've got the schools now really secure. You know, you can't get in a school without buzzing in and camera systems, and we've given them a lot of some money for that and stuff, but it's just now identifying the child that has the issue and everything. You know, it's a different world than when I grew up. You know, we didn't have social media. It's and you had to talk to other kids. And I think between the advancement of social media and COVID really did some damage. Looking back, we should have never closed the schools down. Did some damage, some mental health damage. You got kids, you know, I used to ride my bike to find kids in the neighborhood to play with. Now they get out, come home from school, and they get on their PlayStation and don't communicate, and it's just a society problem, and it's unfortunate that we have to have an Office of School Safety, but it's the reality.
I think nipping it in the bud, Tony, is a real key, too, because, you know, after some school violence episodes, we read about after the fact that, oh, this happened to this person, this happened, and this happened, and you wonder, there were so many red flags, how come somebody didn't catch that? You
know? Well, and that's to Todd's point. He brings up, you know, the Office of School Safety helps schools with those, I don't want to say telltale signs, but it gives them the tools to look for those things, but also for people not to be afraid to say something. You know, it's amazing. In my previous life, being in the military, I did a lot of things with accident investigations and things like that. How many times I sat and did an investigation and people would say to me, yeah, we kind of thought this was a problem. Well, why didn't you say something? And I understand people are afraid to say something because you don't want to get somebody in trouble. You don't want to embarrass somebody. But this is where they'll do the investigation. They'll get the professionals involved to say, okay, is there a threat? Because what we don't want to do is wake up the next morning and say, you know what, doggone it, that could have been stopped if I would have said something. And that's where, you know, it's very valuable to have those individuals there and the expertise and then training those teachers on what they need to be looking for as well.
EMS, I know we wanted to address that today.
I want to talk about that. You know, Todd mentioned for the Wisconsin Towns Association, they're putting on their district meetings. Obviously, Todd and Travis were down at a southern part. Myself and Senator Kieski was more at another district meeting up in Wisconsin Dells and had the counties and the townships up in that area. And obviously, road funding for the townships was definitely brought up. That was probably half the discussion. The other half of the discussion was EMS. And, you know, the funding mechanisms for EMS. On Friday, I met with the EMS director here in Richland County and just talked about some of the struggles with funding, also workload. I mean, it's interesting. We have an aging population. I think everybody sees that in Richland County. With that aging population, those ambulance calls are actually going up. And you've seen that over the last several years. Unfortunately, reimbursements have not kept up. And so that's something that we are looking at a bill right now in the Assembly. And also Senator Markline and I are looking at a bill to try to update some of the funding mechanisms for EMS to try to make it more of a regional wise instead of maybe a county focus. So there's a lot of different things we're looking at because we are stressed in the EMS and to be fair, in the fire departments as well.
Mm-hmm. Anything you wanted to add, Tom?
Yeah, that was the road. You're right, roads and EMS. But another thing is too is, the training hours. That was one of the biggest complaints. It takes a lot to be an EMT, and that was one of the, you know, you got somebody that wants to really be an EMT, but they have younger kids in school and married and or whatever, and they got to go to class all the time. They have to get so many hours, and I know over the years we've chipped away a little bit at some loosening some of those regulations. Not that they can't, they have to learn how to save your life, I mean, but it's just ridiculous some of the regulations they have to go through. And then, you know, rural towns or the townships especially, they're in districts. They have to contract with a municipality if they don't have their own. And as costs go up, as whoever they're contracting with, costs go up, they pass that on or have to negotiate a new contract. It's caused a lot of conflicts. I've got a couple townships that, you know, got in a fight with the place, the village they were, and moved to a different one, and then everything falls apart, and that's going on a lot. I know Friday at our meeting, you know, one of the counties mentioned about going to a countywide EMS service and just grouping every municipality into one and having an ambulance crew here and here and here in the county, and the county taxing for it. And but we've got to figure it out because it's not expensive to run. I mean, when I left the city of Dodgeville, it was like $400,000 just for an ambulance. So it's not cheap, but we need them. And as Tony's right, as people are getting more his age, you know, they need an ambulance more. And so it's the baby boomers are getting old and things. So yeah.
Yeah, you want to know that somebody's going to respond when you call. Right?
But that's the issue. I mean, especially when you look at, our area, we're fortunate. We're okay right now, knock on wood. But when you look at some of the parts of northern Wisconsin, I mean, some of those places this past year did not have EMS service. And that, obviously they do now, but there was a period that they did not have coverage. And so I think we have come to the expectation when you dial 911, someone's going to show up. Well, we just have to make sure when you dial 911, that continues. Someone's going to pick you up, and there's stress there because of the, you know, volunteerism, just the workforce shortages, things like that, and funding. I mean, the funding for years have not been there. Last budget, we did increase the funding assistance program from 2.2 million up to 25 million. That directly goes to EMS providers and helps with equipment, train costs, etc. But you know, we're realizing that we need to do more funding.
What's the latest on broadband?
Broadband is always something that's brought up every time. It's interesting. I was reading an article the other day, and unfortunately, the money that the federal government allocated, it was called BEAD, and I don't ask me what the acronym is, but the state of Wisconsin was supposed to get $1.1 billion. I mean, that money is still in the pipeline. Unfortunately, we haven't got any yet. I know providers like Reedsburg Utility, I was helping them last week with an issue that they're having with one of their BEAD grants. I know Laval and all these other providers are getting in the pipeline for the grants. It's just none of those have been allocated yet. So it'll be interesting tomorrow night to see what the governor does for that. I will be very, I'm just going to be brutally honest. If we have $1.1 billion that we're supposed to get from the feds, what people have to understand, a private company has to match that. So if it's Spectrum or Charter or whoever, or like Laval Telephone or whoever, they also have to have it, you know, it's they have to have skin in the game. You know, it's some type of match. So it's really like a $1.7 billion that we're going to have for broadband in the next couple of years. It's just we're going to want to see that money work through before maybe as a state we put more money into broadband. And that will be kind of that last connection down on the rural road is where I think we're going to have funding for that. It just depends on what we do and what the feds are going to do.
Pretty important, Todd, because a lot of people are working at home and attracting people that want to move out into the rural areas. They want to work at home. Right,
right. You know, and I think, too, I was just talking, one of my townships, Town of Clyde, which is, you know, in your listener area.
Sure.
They're really struggling down there because, you know, the terrain around here is terrible. And I think people think broadband, it's like bring the fiber right up to my door. You can't put fiber in some of this area because of the rock. And so we've got to figure out, and I think as technology is evolving, you know, I think it's going to be a satellite whole, just no towers, no nothing. It's just going to be all satellite here at some point. But when that comes, I don't know. But we've come a long ways, I will say, getting broadband since my time in office, 10 years ago to now. They are putting more and more broadband in. But for Dodgeville, for example, TDS came out and put stuff in the city, or, you know, more another option in the city. That's four options the city of Dodgeville has for cable, internet, and fiber. We don't need four options in a city. I would rather that money be spent to one of my rural areas, town of Dodgels, for example. However, it's more, you know, it's a moneymaker for them to go where the population is. You know, you look around here and you got somebody that's 4 miles from their next neighbor. I believe I had heard a figure that it's like 50,000 to 75,000 a mile to put fiber in the ground. That's just to put, you know, so you look at, you think about, you know, like that. So,
well, and just to Todd's point, 3 years ago, it was $32,000 a mile. Now we're up to in excess of $50,000 a mile. So it kind of goes with what when I talked about road funding, what a mile of road costs now looks like a mile of fiber. And that's where I think you look at Todd's point is maybe it needs to be all of the above. Yes, fiber's the gold standard. But with the technology that's on board, you know, maybe it is satellite-based. You know, there's different things we need to think about. But the other aspect of that, Phil, is the capacity. In other words, can the people on the ground, like I was coming down from Waniwok this morning and there was some equipment on the side of the road because they've been boring. You know, they've been putting fiber in the ground as we speak, probably not this week, but they've been doing that. There is a capacity issue. You know, they only have so much folks that can do that work as well. So you don't want to necessarily flood the market with more money. We just got to kind of piecemeal it on what their capacity is as we build this out.
From high technology to lower technology, but they've been talking about fighting to keep AM radios in cars and tractors and things like that. How about that?
Well, I'm not. I have four tractors. Two of them have, you know, real nice cabs. And I think AM is still very popular with folks, so I would fully support that we keep those vehicles,
hell,
and tractors.
I'm really old. I can remember. That's all I listened to when I got my driver's license, or at the farm and stuff, and milking cows is AM and stuff. But I go back to eight tracks. Now we have I have satellite radio in my car and AM and FM, but yeah, it's interesting. So, but you're in the radio world, so
yeah. Who's going to need the AMS before? What do you say?
Representatives Tony Kurtz and Todd Novak on today's morning show. Everyone Truck Parts, local people serving you with the good stuff. By Jones Chevrolet, the car and truck people of Southwest Wisconsin, and Prem Meats and Catering of Spring Green. Small enough to know you, big enough to serve you. It's 17 below zero at WRCO Studios on the Wirtz Floor and Home Thermometer.
Over 100 years of serving Southwest Wisconsin, all of us at Jones Chevrolet are honored to continue the tradition. Whether it's helping you choose a new Chevrolet vehicle, finding the perfect